is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The G7, the G20 meeting in Bali, Indonesia recently. One attendee in particular, his name is Klaus Schwab. This is a man we need to follow because he has dreams of going to the status quo ante of 2019 and Davos world. But I welcome Conrad Black, who has attended Davos, as I have not. I've only ever read about it over the years. However, I learned from a column that Conrad publishes at the National Post that Klaus Schwab and his colleagues imagine a world going back to 2019. This is a completely different planet than then, the pandemic, and now the turbulence in China, the war in Eurasia. Good heavens, Conrad, a very good evening to you. Who is Klaus Schwab, and what is it that he imagines can happen again as it did before? Good evening to you.
Yeah, good evening to you, John. Well, he is the founder of the meetings at Davos, which are now called the World Economic Forum, and there are regional meetings under its aegis all over the place, but he founded it in this little town of Davos, which was made a bit famous by Thomas Mann's famous novel, The Magic Mountain, and which was a rather depressing story. And it is a slightly depressing town. It's a drab little mountain town, quite inaccessible. And it is the last place in the world, or at least in the Western world, where you'd want to go for meetings of this kind, but that's where they are. And he started out just wanting to get some governments together with private sector people, and then it grew and grew. He got steadily more prominent people in government, different governments all around the world, coming to it, and then he would sell attendance basically tickets to attend to well-to-do people all around the world so they could, as the phrase goes in Davosese, engage in networking. So he would bring in these prominent people to talk with each other and hold forth, and then he would bring in all kinds of well-to-do people from virtually every country in the world who would pay him so they could network, and he would fill up these amphitheaters in Davos for these sessions discussing every subject under the sun, and it became a tremendous money spinner, you say. Now, he claims he's running a nonprofit foundation, and I don't doubt his sincerity, but he's onto a good idea, and he's obviously made a lot of money out of it. But what he really has done is brought the leaders of the international organizations, the United Nations and all the United Nations agencies, World Trade Organization, World Court, all of these international organizations, World Health Organization, and they are a special kind of executive committee of the World Economic Forum and the Davos movement. And when the COVID pandemic came down upon us, Klaus came out of the policy closet, and having been an amiable convener of people professing to be doing it in the interests of greater international understanding and without a thought to any profit for himself, he suddenly became an implausible sort of Pied Piper of a new movement of world unity, and he coined the phrase the Great Reset. We have to stop being such uninhibited capitalists. We must think constantly of the environment and of the disadvantaged people of the world, and it's a kind of relatively bland and apparently benign imposed socialism that he's advocating, to those of us who, I mean, I used to go as part of the media group, and I was always happy to meet with Mr. Murdoch and the late Bob Maxwell and Lord Rothermere and others and media owners in different countries, Kay Graham, and it was a rather good group for me. I was a newspaper owner and I could talk shop with these people, you see, but I didn't realize for a long time that hiding inside the inscrutable exterior of Klaus Schwab was this idea to remake the world as a sort of vast Denmark or something like that, you know. And that's what we're getting. Only it's a rather authoritarian Denmark, you know. It's not the Tivoli Gardens. It's all of us plodding along, avoiding the use of automobiles and living in a very self-conscious way, thinking as our primary consideration at all times how to help poor people at the ends of the earth and how to ensure that we are not doing anything conceivably destructive of the environment. And it's essentially nonsense, and it's not going to fly, but it's out there, and it's been espoused by him and taken up by like-minded people, especially these if I may use the phrase, world Unitarians.
Yes.
Who want to abolish all distinctions of nationality or religion or occupation or anything like that.
Events, my dear boy, events. I believe that's a British Prime Minister. And now, and that's where we are, Conrad, because as I read your column with a great big smile on my face, I thought, have they noticed that things have changed profoundly? That Iran is in revolt, that China's in revolt, that Europe is at war? Have they taken into account that we're not going to hold hands and sing together? We're going to solve these problems on our own, or we're going to take great risks. Is that a matter of interest to Klaus Schwab?
I think it would be if someone were able to put it right to him just the way you did. But I don't. I think he assumes, I believe the president of China was present at that meeting in Indonesia.
Yes, he was. And, he was rude to your prime minister, and that might be...
Of course he was.
That might be a tell on his fate, because the Chinese people are telling him to learn how to swim and to get out.
Yeah. And he also, as I understand it, spent an hour with your president, and they didn't talk about either the origins of COVID or the status of Taiwan, which I would have thought would be the two things that the Western countries would most wish to discuss with the Chinese leader. But the I'm not qualified to say to what extent these two phenomena are connected. On the matter of the as you say, the events, these prolonged and very courageous demonstrations in China, this is a new one for us, because the Chinese don't have a history of civic protest, not only under the communists, but even under previous dynasties. I mean, from time to time, the government changed violently in China, and you had civil wars and things, but not at the time of an apparently strong Chinese government, a civic protest movement functioning all around the country and creating disorderly scenes in the public squares of the whole country. And so this is new, and it must, I think, be in part traceable to the breakdown of Chinese isolationism and the access that China, like everyone else, has to the internet and to everything that comes across your screen from all around the world, where they have a much clearer idea of how other people live and have picked up some of the habits of the West, which is, if you really seriously dislike the way your government is doing things, you go out and protest about it. And that's not much rooted in Chinese history, but it is obviously a substantial problem. Now, here, as in Iran, I mean, there you have people who have been dealing with huge public unrest.
Yes.
All the time the Ayatollahs have been there, and they won by Chinese standards a relatively recent revolution, and again, compared to China, a huge section of the most creative and well educated part of the population of Iran left the country. And where I think in China there is some understandable national pride in the enhanced status of China in the world, in Iran, I think there is great public mortification that Iran is such a primitive country, a theocracy with an intolerant religious view of things. And the burning question in situations like this is, will the police follow orders to fire live ammunition at the civilian population, their fellow citizens? Ceausescu ordered that, and instead they shot him.
Yes.
But when Stalin ordered it, for example, they did as they were told. So the question is the ideological and practical hold of the leadership on the forces of enforcement such that they will take the most radical measures and start killing their fellow citizens in large numbers or not?
Conrad Black, National Post, asking a very good question. I'm John Batchelor.